have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a ridiculous, stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Well, well, well. We've had 3 days of glorious sunshine and some stellar play at Royal Birkdale. Sam Burns is the unlikely leader by two, despite not particularly enjoying Lynx golf. And clearly his mind is also elsewhere, as his wife gave birth to their baby daughter not 2 weeks ago. And despite the benign conditions, though, there are some mini wars taking place along the Lancashire coastline. You've got Scotty Scheffler's doing battle with his putter. Bryson DeChambeau doing battle with the fescue and then the officials. Rory McIlroy's decided to do battle with Bryson, and local favourite Tommy Fleetwood is doing battle with the enormous expectations of the crowds as he looks to win his first major. I think I have enough to get us going. Happy to say we've got a full house. We've got Gary from, where are you, in Scotland somewhere, getting ready for the Senior Open. We've got Dave McIntyre, who's pulled himself away from coaching hurling. Is that what you're doing?
That's correct, yes. Hello.
And Shane Ryan, who is at Birkdale. Shane, who, good to see you, lads, by the way. Before we get into the play, Shane, I just wanted to pass comment this. Is, you know that question you asked about, like, legacy and what, like, do you ever think about what happens when you die? Geez, that became quite something.
I don't know what you're talking about, Fionn. Oh. Which one is that? Yeah, I remember, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, it's trying to look. I mean, obviously, Scotty Scheffler last year gave us this incredibly deep, penetrating insight into how he sees the world and golf's place in it. So I'm assuming this was just an opportunity for you to probe whether Rory McIlroy thinks about these things on a similar level.
So Scotty this year was in half an hour before Rory, and unrelated, you know, it wasn't my question, it was a different question. He said, you know, basically, he's like, not to be morbid, but we're all going to die. And I don't care, you know, after that, it doesn't really matter what people think of me. And so Rory came in, you know, 20 minutes later or 10 minutes later. And so I was in that mindset of, it's interesting not to consider or care about your historical legacy. I think most people would say that, but there have been a lot of historical figures that live their life in a way, you know, to determine how they're thought about in 100 years, in 1,000 years, right? Very much history on the mind. And I was like, you know, if any golfer thinks about his historical legacy, it would be Rory. And so I was like, that would be a good question for him. And I said to him, part of the question was cut off that you saw online, but basically two kinds of legacies. There's the legacy while you're alive, right? While you're a 60-year-old man and you can enjoy having won the career slam and you can be an elder statesman and all that. And then there's the legacy after your time on earth is gone, right? After you're dead. So do you consider or care about that second legacy? Like, how do you think about that? Do you care about it? And he said he didn't. And that's all I was asking. And somehow that was like the most controversial question. Everybody wanted to talk about it. And like, you know, people tweeting at me like, you know, you should be kicked out of the press conference for that. They should take you right out of the media room. And you're like, are people completely insane? Like, oh, really? For asking about someone's historical legacy, what they think about it? That's it. So it was crazy. Tempest in a teacup, I think. And yeah, it was just like, the criticism went right over me because I didn't think I did anything wrong.
No. And the answer to your question is yes, people are completely crazy. So, tell me, Shane, what's the general, like, the atmosphere, like, compared to, say, last year in Portrush? I mean, does it have that same kind of big electric feel? Obviously, Tommy Fleetwood is the local favorite. Is there, what's the whole atmosphere like?
It's interesting. So, yeah, to think it back to Portrush, you had Scotty going for it. Obviously, the story going in was Rory and Shane being in Ireland. And so that was very different than this, which kind of started with a whimper. But then on Friday night went bananas, right, with the Bryson stuff. And, you know, Rory made sure yesterday that would continue to be the biggest story. So that's kind of put a strange, you know, spell on the whole thing. It's very interesting, very dramatic. In terms of the golf, it's, you know, the leaderboard's so-so. I personally find Sam Burns' story, you know, whether he can close at this point. He's got a two-shot lead. He's never had that before. Did have a one-shot lead at Oakmont. So I think today's going to be very interesting. But I think the center of attention has been the Bryson stuff by far.
Sure. Well, let's get into that straight away. I'm going to ask Gary. As a professional golfer, you've seen the video. It's, I mean, to say it's controversial is an understatement. In your mind, was Bryson correct to be penalized?
And I think, you know, there's a lot of opinion about this, but the kind of opinion doesn't really matter. And yesterday, just to kind of reaffirm, A, it looked very dodgy. And sometimes when you're watching golf like that and you see stuff happen, you kind of, you shriek a little bit. So it looked dodgy. And then you have to give them the benefit of the doubt with camera angles, because you see that all the time in sport. Even someone sending a golf swing, if it's the camera angle's all over the place, it's not doing what you think it's doing. But yeah, it was very dodgy. Like when you're in the hay like that, you tiptoe in and you circle around it and do your thing. You don't bulldoze in. So that's one thing. And then for 100% certainty on it, I'm actually over at a qualifier in Scotland for the British Senior Open. So when I was registering yesterday in the office, two of the referees were there and I asked them about it. It's just a penalty kick. It's home and holes. Whether it's intentional or not is irrelevant to the rule. But that's not really the issue. The issue is, you know, he was in the hay and there's no doubt he tried to give himself a bit of freedom in his backswing. And it's disappointing. The thing on this that's really disappointing, and there's no red card system in golf, but I think if there were to be one, it's next to impossible nowadays to get disqualified for a rules infringement. And that's probably something, when something is quite blatant, I think that should be the case. And I just hope that
you,
he doesn't win.
Are you saying, Gary, you think he should have been DQ'd for that?
It's not that he should have been DQ'd for it. There's no real rule on that. But if he is, the rule is you can't, you know, like the number one rule of golf is you play the ball as it lies.
Yeah.
And he undoubtedly hasn't done that. So, you know,
he paid a penalty for it.
Well, yeah, you get the two-shot penalty.
Yeah.
But he's in breach of the rules. So,
yeah, and for that, he was punished.
Yeah, but the punishment doesn't fit the crime, really. This is the whole thing. Like, guys have been, like Simon Dyson got done for what, well, it changed his life at the end of his career for a rule that now doesn't exist. But, it's a complete, in my eyes, breach of of the etiquette of the sport. Okay. So why shouldn't anyone want to DQ?
For anyone, I mean, I'm assuming anyone listening here already knows what happened, but just for the unlikely case that someone doesn't know, on Friday, Bryson came in on 7-under, played absolutely unbelievable golf. But then at the end of his round, the officials approached him and said that there was an issue relating to his second shot on the fifth. He'd gone way right into the hay. And then a video surfaced, and then he and the officials went back out to the fifth to the area in question. And after much debate and much of Bryson's anger, it was deemed that he had in fact been in breach of Rule 8.1A, which states that you must not take actions to improve the conditions affecting the stroke, such as lie, intended stance, swing area, line of play, etc., etc. Bryson then threatened to pull out of the tournament altogether, which meant that the field was left waiting on the tee sheets or the tee times for the following day. And then the last we heard of it on Friday night was him taking two buckets of balls to go to the range. And lo and behold, then he shows up Saturday morning and he's been adjudicated a two-shot penalty, and he played actually pretty well yesterday, I'll say that. And it didn't seem to trouble him unduly. Shane, like, obviously you're there, you're in the, it's the talking point. Is there much sympathy amongst American journalists for Bryson?
No, I don't think so. I think the Gary view, I don't know if I'll call it the prevailing view. I don't think people should think he should be DQ'd, but I think most people agree with what Gary was saying, where the evidence is pretty clear. And so I haven't really seen a lot of people sympathize with Bryson. I'm trying to think, you know, a few players have sympathized with him.
Yeah.
But that's more on the grounds.
Max Homa, particularly.
Yeah, Max Homa. There, who was it? Was it Homa who said there wasn't enough evidence, which was one of the few people who said that? The bulk of the sympathy, yeah.
Mark Calcavecchia tweeted, "No way was that. Shouldn't that have been adjudicated a penalty?"
Right.
And the reason I ask, and this is the point I want to make, is that whatever you think about it, is that do you think that there's a sense that, not that the PGA Tour doesn't enforce rules, but that there's been a general kind of laxity in the enforcement of kind of marginal, or there's a perception that certainly that maybe had this happened in a PGA Tour event, that the rule mightn't have been enforced, but that the RNA being like the, you know, the stewards of the integrity of the game.
Fionn, that's not fair. All these rules officials sing from the same hemisphere. Their one job is, you know, they don't want to be in these situations. They, like, you speak to any referee on tour, they are happy to sit in a buggy all day for 4 days and have no dramas. The last thing they want is there with a bunch of TV cameras around them. But they're only doing what they're doing because the number one thing is you have to protect the field.
In no way criticizing the RNA officials. In no way. In fact, like, I think my own view would be that they did their due diligence. They brought him out to the spot in question. They didn't just rely on the video evidence that was given to them. And after much discussion with Bryson, where he showed them the swing path and the kind of swing and his line of play and all the rest, they made a determination that he had, in fact, been in breach of the rule. And I think that's all to the credit of the RNA officials, who did exactly what they should have done. So in no way. Sorry, Shane, go on.
No, I was just going to add to that this is the big thing that's worth saying here, is that if it were up to the RNA alone, this never would have been called. And so going back to the, you know, why would you be sympathetic to Bryson? A lot of players and some, you know, media as well are coming with, well, the guys who have the cameras on them all the time are essentially being legislated more and more thoroughly than anybody else. And so they didn't call the penalty on Bryson there. They never would have called it in the aftermath, except that somebody, and this story is still remaining to be told, I think is really maybe the most interesting part of it. How did it get to them? How did it get to them? Right. And they're not supposed to take viewer calls anymore. So some other method, it came to their attention. And so I think that might be a big difference, is not just, okay, Bryson's every single shot is on camera when he's leading a tournament. Not just like the fact that it's a major, but everybody's eyes are on him. And so, again, I didn't hear many people say that it wasn't a penalty. I think that was a really extreme take. What a lot of people said was it's unequal enforcement, and even if they got this one right, maybe that's a problem. Now, I'm not sure I agree with that, but that was the Bryson sympathetic angle.
To be fair, it is uneven. There's no denying that. Yeah. And that is what's unfair about the sport. But you can't have a body cam on everybody. It just doesn't make any sense. But the one thing you can all have, no matter what you play or what you shoot, and I've played some utter shite in the last few weeks, but you got to play by the rules. That's the beauty of the sport. And we've got one of our A-listers, probably the top, easily in the top three guys on planet Earth that play this game. And he's been an amazing ambassador in many, many different guises, but you just can't be doing that stuff. And it's very black and white on this. You've hit it into the munchies. You know, I had it the other day in Carton House on a par three. I've hit the most horrific tee shot and I've gone in and I could have trampled all over it and hacked it in front of me. And I have to take an unplayable on a par three and get my rangefinder out to get myself to see how far I'm from the flag. That's just the pain of what you do and what you go through. So It's just unacceptable, really.
Well, Dave, I'll put this to you, Dave, and Shane and Gary, chime in if you feel. Let's just take it as given that it was not deliberate. And I think that the rules officials made a point of saying that it was an accidental breach or that it wasn't deliberate cheating. Do you think, though, and to my earlier point, and maybe I didn't make it quite as subtly as I wanted to, is that there's no doubt been a slight erosion of rules enforcement in professional golf over the last couple of decades in terms of, you know, I can think of examples where Tiger Woods maybe in his time took a, you know, went into the pond and then took a drop maybe a little further on from where the ball crossed the line and, you know, whatever, like little things like that. But so is Bryson perhaps acting without being fully cognizant of the fact that, like, you can't just stamp around grass trying to figure out the best way to play? You have to approach, as Eddie Pepperell said, it's like you have to go in very gingerly into areas like this so as not to disturb the area of play.
Well, there's a few things. I think, firstly, any thought that these players are not fully aware of what the rules are is naive. These guys have been playing the game for 30 years. They know exactly what the rules are. Bryson DeChambeau will never, and all of his fellow professionals will never have been in any doubt as to what the etiquette is when you approach a ball in a lie such as the one that he approached the other day. Now, I am in the group that are inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt as to the intent of it. But, like, that's really, as Paul McGinley said, intent or otherwise is totally irrelevant here.
It is.
The fact is, he's clearly and obviously improved his lie. And that's against the rules. I'm not for having him thrown out of the tournament like Gary is, but I think he was penalised for a two-shot penalty. My issue with him would be more so the delay and the fact that he just didn't accept what was coming his way. And he, as Rory said, kind of held the tournament hostage in some ways. And he put an awful lot of people out, not just himself and his backroom team, but his fellow professionals, all the volunteers, the caddies, all of the administrators, everyone associated with the tournament, kept them there till 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. Players couldn't really properly plan their day the next day. So that's very much him placing himself front and center and not really caring about what goes on around him. I thought he had a point when he was brought a video of Wyndham Clark at Shinnecock Hills. And Bryson shouldn't be getting into whataboutery. He was penalised for something he very obviously did here, whether it was intentional or not. But to take it back to your point, Fionn, about the rules not being properly enforced, they were not dissimilar situations involving Wyndham Clark at the US Open last month and what Bryson did here, because Clark clearly improved his lie. There's no question about it. If any one of our viewers and our listeners didn't see what Wyndham Clark did, he ended up in a what looked like a sandy area. And, you know, he stepped right across the back of his ball, unnecessarily so, clearly trampled the grass behind it. And there's no question he improved his ability to get the club face to the back of the ball. There was nothing done about that. So when it comes to equal treatment, Bryson's definitely got a point there. But I'm tired of hearing golfers complaining about the fact that the guys who are on camera more often get adjudicated in a slightly more stringent fashion. With the fame and the fortune comes the center, the limelight, and you being the center of attention in a far more obvious and regular basis. That's why you get the bigger sponsorship fees. That's why you get the bigger appearance fees in the terms of the back end of the season. That's why you get the millions of YouTube followers that Rob Bryson has. Goes with the territory. You can't complain that you're being adjudicated unfairly because the camera's on you more often. If the camera wasn't on you more often, you're probably down the bottom of the field. Nobody knows who you are. And the big brand names aren't queuing up to throw millions of dollars at you.
Shane, I'm in a very active golf WhatsApp group with a lot of passionate people expressing some fairly strong opinions. And one of the opinions that was expressed was that this is unfairly targeting Bryson because he's a high-profile member of the LIV golf tour. And it was pointed out that John Rahm had thrown a club on Friday on 15, and all he got was just a telling off and goes, John, don't do that again. Right. But you know, this person just isn't going to back down. He just believes that, like, it's not just that they're being that it's uneven, as Gary said, because these are the big stars, but that he's being unfairly targeted because he's on live.
That's a terrific question. Let me go back real quick just before we move on about the note of intention, the question of intention. Correct that it doesn't matter in terms of what kind of penalty you get, but obviously it matters in the court of public opinion and all that. I thought the worst part of this whole deal was the RNA official coming out and saying what he did was accidental. He repeated it three times. And you're going, how do you know? Right? This is a matter of intent. This is a matter of something that's inside the guy's mind. Right? We don't know what was in his heart when he was doing it. Maybe it wasn't intentional. Maybe it was. You have no clue. Even if he said to you it was accidental, you have no clue if it was accidental or not. I thought that reeked of like a plea deal type situation. I just thought that was sort of poor form by them. You don't need to say that. It makes no sense. And if we had had one question to ask them, that would have been mine. How do you know? How do you know it was intent? Okay. I just wanted to get that out there because it's been bothering me for days. Okay. To your question, is he being unfairly targeted? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gary. Sorry.
Ben, I agree with you on that, but I just think he was doing that because obviously it's such a big story. He was trying to protect the player as much as anything.
Yeah, but it's absurd, isn't it? But you're right. I mean, you're obviously right. I just think it's absurd. Let's put it this way as to your question of Bryson being unfairly targeted. Let's say this is a hypothetical. Let's say it was somebody in the media center who saw this video, pursued it with the RNA, pushed it and pushed it and pushed it till they had to reconsider it. And then they went and, they went and did what they did. Let's say this writer didn't like Liv. Okay. Then you've got a clear case if he's being unfairly targeted. I'm the last guy who likes to give into the pissing and moaning of the Liv golfers about how aggrieved they all are and how everybody's against them. I don't like all that. But I do wonder, I mean, I just couldn't help but wonder if this was Rory McIlroy, if this was Scottie Scheffler, would that same ruling have happened by the same mechanism? Answer is unknowable. It surely could have. You could easily have somebody who doesn't like Rory McIlroy seeing it and who's in a position to push it with the RNA. That could, 100% happen. However, I won't lie. It did make me think, I definitely think there's a chance it might not have happened if it were somebody different. So take that for what it's worth.
I don't think so. I think Rory wouldn't do it or Scottie Scheffler. And we can remember back to when Darren Clark played in Carton House in the Irish Open and he hit it in the munchies down the ninth and the crowd improved his lie and he went up to the ball because he had marked it because there was a weather delay and he went up to the ball and chipped it back out in the fairway as if what he was going to do. So
yeah,
I just think it's such a cool game because there's such an integrity to it. And it's like any juniors you ever, and I say this to my son all the time, I honestly don't care what you shoot. You just got to play with integrity and everything else takes care of itself after that.
Donal in the comments, and please feel free to comment if you want. He says, the most egregious lie improvement I've seen is Paige Spiranak in the 2025 Creator Classic, but she didn't get a penalty because she turned on the waterworks. I remember that one. That was outrageous.
But, that was incredible. Bryson should have cried. That would have helped.
Well, he got very angry. He was so.
Yeah,
I understand that. There's a lot going on here. It's a major. He's had a pretty shitty time of it in the majors this year. He's going very, very well on this one. Look, I get it's pressure and all the rest of it, but okay. So the thing happens on Friday. He gets the two-shot penalty. We all move on with our lives. It's a nice talking point for us in the golf media afterwards. And Rory McIlroy just decides yesterday, okay, guys, I don't think we're over with this because I'm now going to throw my 2 cents worth. And I don't really like him. I'm not going to defend him. And he really, really made no secret. I think it's more reflective of latter years, Rory, where I'm just going to say the thing that I think. I'm not going to be diplomatic. It really does speak to the fact that there is absolutely no love lost between these two guys.
Yeah, he was properly stuck the boot in, didn't he?
Ugh.
There were multiple points during that chat with Rory where he would have had the opportunity just to pull it back a little and he never even remotely looked interested in doing that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it kind of just took me back to the Koepka incident, you know, where he rolled his eyes and when he was just speaking to NBC that time. I'm not going to go as far as saying that it's, you know, there's bullying involved here, but I thought Rory came on a bit strong, to be honest. Like,
yeah,
if he doesn't like him, that's fair enough. And I'm sure when you're in that locker room, and obviously they don't have to spend as much time with the Liv guys as they used to have, used to do, but there is a sense of professionalism, I think, and sort of bitching about your fellow professionals in that regard. Going back to whether or not it would have been pulled up on camera and adjudicated if it had been Rory or Scotty that had done a similar thing, I don't think Rory's speaking in anything close to those terms if it is a Scotty Scheffler that has been penalised two shots here.
I think that's a very good point, actually, yeah.
And so for that reason, I think it would have been easy for Rory to say, look, only those in the mind of Bryson will know whether the improvement of his lie was intentional or not. I as a fellow professional, I've been trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. But look, he's been given his two-shot penalty. I think everybody should move on. I personally think that's what Rory should have left it. But Rory's never done that. And it's what makes him and Bryson two of the most compelling players in the game. And obviously, as people in the media who love when stuff like this kind of gets blown out of proportion a little bit, we want both of them to continue in this sort of a vein because it's bloody entertaining. And the more of it, the better, please. If we had more of those types of characters in the game, golf would be an awful lot popular than it is. So while I'm saying I think Rory went a little too far, I was also kind of on the edge of my seat with my box of popcorn as well watching it.
What did you think, Gary?
I it's the one thing about the game of golf that I absolutely despise, so I'm pretty strong on it. And I, you know, Rory sticking the, like, I could just imagine the players in the players' lounge sat there looking at the TV and going, Jesus Christ, what's going on here? You know, the tournament's live too, that's the thing. I think we said enough about it, but, and he's got his two-shot penalty, but there's no doubt it's a huge slant on the character.
And I think that's actually absolutely, because despite it all, there is an actual tournament happening across the 18 holes of Royal Birkdale, and Sam Burns leads by 2 on 10 under. Shane, this is a guy who has said already that he has no particular love for Lynx golf, and yet is playing the course like it's his second home.
Yeah, you know, it's not very Lynx-y this week, is it? I mean, it's still a Lynx course, of course, but, you know, with no wind, with really no weather, no rain or anything like that, it's playing pretty easy for these guys, obviously, right? You're seeing a slew of 62s, which is, I think we've had maybe – I think my math's wrong, but we've almost had as many 62s in this major as every major previous, right? It's getting close to that number. Maybe 4 this week and 6 total before that or something. Anyway, it's not really asking him to be that creative, I don't think. I was there. I asked him. I was there when he talked about the Lynx thing. What he doesn't like a lot of Americans who are used to sort of playing target golf and then playing the ball high, they don't like if they think they hit a good shot and it happens to run off into a bunker or run off the green or whatever because you hit a downslope or something. But I think we've seen a lot of people have the trajectory. I mean, going back to Bobby Jones, who walked off the first time he was on St. Andrews and, you know, very furious. We've seen a lot of trajectories of Americans who don't get it at first and come to love it. So, you know, I think just because he hates it now doesn't mean he'll always hate it. Certainly if he wins the Open, I don't think he'll hate it as much. But it is, it's a cool story in the sense of he's never done well at this event. It's always kind of been in his head. Wasn't even supposed to be here because of his, you know, his daughter was going to be born, I think, last week. But instead she came a couple weeks early. And even still he wasn't going to come. But his wife was like, you should go. There's a lot going on here that's sort of, if he were to win, you would go, man, oh, man, the chances of this happening were so small. So much had to go right. But I think the reason I'm looking forward to today so much is that, you know, in Oakmont, we saw Burns shoot a 78 when he had a one-shot lead going to the final day. I think Brandel Chamblee just tweeted he's had a lead 5 times, 54-hole lead in his professional career. He's only converted one of them. However, he keeps getting better and better at majors, and I thought he was great at Shinnecock. You know, granted, he maybe had one bad putt at the end or something, but he really made a charge. And among the contenders, I thought he was the best player on that day. And he just came one shy of getting to Wyndham Clark. So if you want to read it that way, you can see sort of an upward trajectory but this is the ultimate test. I mean, you've got a two-shot lead. Yes, you are going to have people charging underneath you, you know, beneath you, because the course is so gettable. However, it's all there for you. You have to think, man, if you shoot a 67 or something like that, you're going to win.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very compelled to see if he can close the deal today.
Yeah, me too. Gary, though, if the conditions are relatively benign, and my understanding is that the weather is going to be fairly kind of easygoing today as well, is just that, like, you know, there's someone, it's open for someone to come screaming out of the backfield to post like a good threatening number that maybe under pressure, someone, even with his absolutely exemplary iron play, Sam Burns might struggle to get it over the line. So it remains a very, very open championship, pun intended.
It does. Cause you know, if Burns doesn't do his job today and he, you know, maybe, which is so easy to do. He's trying to win his first major. He can easily not be on it and shoot one or two or three over, and he's back to seven. And then the lead is only eight. So someone on one under par can have a crazy round. You know, there's a lot of guys up there that have never been there before as well. And Tommy Fleetwood on, what's Tommy on, five? Like, I'm sure he's, like, Paul Laurie came from 10 back. So it's not inconceivable that someone could finish an hour and a half before the final group and win this thing. But if Sam Burns does his job, obviously makes that a lot more difficult. But certainly someone's going to shoot low today. As Shane was saying, it's not the kind of old school blown a hoolie 13, 14 degrees in Baltic. So it's playing fast and it's playing tricky. And if you're kind of freewheeling at three or four under, you can get off to a fast start in the front nine like Fox did yesterday and just hang on to it and pull something. And you know, it's only us talking nonsense from Thursday to Sunday, but it only really matters, you know, what the total is. So if someone posts 10 or 11, you got to go buy it. So I think it's fascinating because there's a lot of, you know, I wouldn't say we're looking at the first winner since Ben Curtis, but there's potential for that kind of a winner today, which is exciting too. And whether it's a one-hit wonder or the start of an amazing career, we'll never know until further down the road. But I'd like to see Sam Burns hang on and do his job. I think it's a cool story. I think his progression through these majors doesn't merit it because you got to go and do it. But I think if he goes out and shoots 67, he's going to be impossible to beat.
But to your point, Gary, I think the likelihood of a first-time winner is pretty strong. So you've got Burns at 10, and then you've got Ryan Fox and your pick, Siwoo Kim, at 8, followed by Ryan Gerard and Lucas Herbert at 7s, Cam Young at 6, Ludvig Åberg also at 6 with DeChambeau, Jackson Suber, and then followed on 5s, Rasmus Nirgaarden and Tommy Fleetwood. And then you've got Xander.
You've got Harry after that.
Yeah, you've got a bunch of them.
Just to point out real quick, Gary, Kim Young is at 6 because he birdied his first three holes. So if, like, you're looking at a Johnny Miller type situation where someone goes and shoots a 61 and wins it, there's a guy to keep an eye on early. He's come out like a house on fire.
Yeah. Oh, it's you know, and like Kim Young is, you know, his mindset going out, like, he's literally under no pressure. He won't start, if he keeps going, he won't feel a sting until 14 or 15. And then obviously it's how he adapts to that. But he's just got his foot down. And as you were saying, the conditions being so benign, and we know, you know, with modern golf, some of these links courses can be obsolete. So it's more than, I think we're going to see 5 or 6 very, very good scores from the pack. It's just, is it enough, depending on what the leaders do?
Actually, on that chain, is there a consensus? Because, like, look, 10 under on Saturday is a relatively low score for the Open. There's no criticism that I've read of the RNA who've, like, the fairways are baked out dry, but they have watered the greens a little bit, you know. So it's receptive, but it's not, you know, it's still Royal Birkdale. It's still, like, if you don't hit your irons crisply into the right spot on the green, you're going to get into trouble.
Yeah, true. You know, in the course, I mean, there's a few things going on. The course is just beautiful, like most of these open road courses are. It's historic, right? So it's the same way. It's much easier to criticize a Valhalla that was built in, I don't know, the 80s than it is to say, look at this car track, you know, but Brickdale's great, you know, it's you know, playing easy. The nature of how things go in the modern era with some of these old courses. But I will say, I mean, it's putting up some defenses. That the discourse on Thursday, I hung around in the mix zone to hear all the players coming in, really fascinating about what it makes you think about, you know, taking your driver out of your hands on some holes, you know, having to analyze the wind, all this stuff. It gets really deep the way they're thinking about it. So just because you see a few 62s doesn't mean there's no thought and risk reward. Like you said, the one thing is, everybody said when there are crosswinds, this becomes so incredibly hard. So it's kind of a shame that we haven't seen much big wind, because I think that would even let the course show its teeth a little bit more and make this, you know, maybe that much more exciting. But yeah, Fiona, I think your point is good. Like, just because you have some low scores doesn't mean that this is a complete disaster or boring or anything like that.
The leader's only 10 under. You know, we've had three players shoot 8 under for their round. And the lead is only 2 shots greater than that. I mean, the winning score will probably be around 13, 14 under par, which isn't outrageous for an Open Championship. Obviously, given that the conditions have been what they are, like the course on the face of it appears to be playing quite easy. But I love the bunkers. I mean, they're not the biggest bunkers in the world in terms of mass, but in playing terms, they're the biggest bunkers on the planet. The collection areas are absolutely massive. And I love seeing a golfer play a ball 4 meters beyond or to the side of a bunker, and then you just wait with bated breath to see what the collection area, snaffle it and drag it in, and you just see the color drain from the player's face. And we've seen some players have to, you know, circumnavigate their physical attributes in some very weird ways, with one knee in and one hip out, and, you know, consider whether they put it back in.
That John Rahm bunker shot on 18 was sublime.
But even the one that Bryson had to try and engineer his way out of yesterday was just brilliant to watch. And I love that kind of stuff. And Birkdale has provided that sort of defense at times this week.
So, John, what does it teach you? When you're chipping or pitching the ball, keep your legs still. Don't be dancing all over.
Absolutely. Turn your torso and go through. Come here. Let's talk. Look, neutral's favorite is Tommy Fleetwood. He's not yet won a major. He's clearly one of the nice guys at golf, and he's playing on his home course, but it's the course that is closest to his home in Southport. Standing on the 15th tee, he's going along so nicely at 7 under. He has played a very, very intelligent round of golf, not taking too many risks. He's taking rescue clubs rather than risking anything else, and it's being paid off. He's 3 under for the round, and then 2 late birdies kind of put, like, it just feels like put a stick in his spokes a little bit.
You like bogeys, you mean?
Like bogeys,
yeah, the 2 bogeys. Did I say birdies? I meant bogeys. What's the I mean, he said it himself in the post round. He goes, maybe he's just taking pressure off himself when he said, he goes, look, there's so many guys ahead of him, so he's going to need other guys to do stuff to give him a chance of winning, rather than go, you know, I can go out and post a very low round. Like, defeatist is the wrong word. Is he trying to kind of mitigate his own expectations, or is he being a realist?
I think he's been a realist. He'll undoubtedly have to change his strategy a little bit today on the front nine, at least, because, you know, he's got to get to realistically at least 8 or 9, maybe 8 under at least on the 10th tee. You know, whether Tommy finishes 7th or 27th or 3rd even, it doesn't massively make a difference. The only outcome he wants is a win, so... And he's an elite driver of the golf ball. Like, he's, you know, I can't remember. Is it Colton Oss gave him the great nickname? He's the fairway Jesus. So, you know, I would stick driver in his hand today and just go for it. You know,
Gary,
why not?
Nick Faldo made a very interesting point yesterday, and again, it's why Nick Faldo can be so good in his analysis. He said that, like, he pulled a couple of irons late on And he said that that's what happens when tension creeps in, is all of a sudden your body, you're not completing your turn and your arms flip and you're taking your arms and all of a sudden that ball just goes, just pulls a little left. And he's clearly, he's like, despite the fact that he comes across as super kind of chill and all the rest, he's obviously feeling the pressure.
Well, there's no doubt. It's similar to, you know, Shane, or similar probably to Rory and Paul Rocks the first time around. You know, it's there's way more heat on Tommy than anyone else. And if he could just let the shackles off on the front nine today and see where it takes him, and then you know, that's kind of what we all want. Then the tournament creates a drama of its own on the back nine, and can he deal with that? I think everyone outside of their initial picks or their pockets are hoping that Tommy Fleetwood can win this thing. It'd be an unbelievable story.
We need Tommy Fleetwood to go out and do a cameo he's done today. And,
totally, yeah.
Train. The point you make about Fowler Field is so well made. He's still the best in the business.
He's so good, isn't he?
Explain about that pull and not rotating your hips through the ball when you get a little more tense. He's explained it so beautifully to me. He is thoroughly uneducated in these matters. And just his general tone, general demeanor around the course of the day. I just wish we saw more of him. I know he's in his retirement years now and he just dips in and out of the majors and everything, but Faldo was brilliant. For Fleetwood to only play the last four holes and two over par when two of those are par fives was so deflating.
Yeah.
Even feeling amongst the crowd as he made his way down 18. When he pulled his approach left, he was like, oh, God, what a chance this was. Now, maybe all the pressure will be removed from his shoulders now because he's really got nothing to lose. He can go out and attack the course. If he goes out and shoots 72, 73 today and falls in the leaderboard, no one's going to be even looking at him. So if he gets off to a hot start and puts himself in position, making the turn, he could get a really good score and get into the clubhouse. And who knows what might happen then, but he's going to have to go like 62 low. You know, he's going to have to shoot 62, 61 today. There is an unbelievably low score out there today for somebody.
There is.
If they're able to get momentum going and then keep it, retain it, somebody could easily go around in a spectacularly low score today.
Yeah. Unlike our colleague, Gary, who's a very good prognosticator, a big Siwoo Kim, and his Siwoo's sitting quite nicely. I'm an appalling prognosticator. I picked Rory to win, despite the fact that when I think about it, Rory, he won the Masters, but he hasn't really played amazingly this year at all. It's been an okay year. It's fine. But the one player none of us really thought about was Scottie Scheffler, who has done absolutely everything brilliantly this week except for make one putt. He cannot make a putt, and he's hit Shane, he's hit some really good putts, like he's rolling on lovely lines, they're just not going down for him. What's the general feeling on the world number one?
Yeah, it feels like every as you asked this, he just hit an approach to about a foot and a half, which maybe he can make that. Maybe that's close enough for him. But no, it's, you know, it's been the story of like every major for him this year. It seems like really, I think actually maybe every single major where he's right there and you're just waiting for the guy to make a run, but he can't do it. And it's all the putting. I mean, his ball striking is still really good. He's had a good year. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. He's played better than any other player this year, but he's not. Look, I think some stats would show you that his approach is actually a little worse than last year. The approach game might be a little worse in certain ways, but it really feels like it's all the putting. It feels like it always comes down to that. And like you said, I mean, there's like you know, the same thing at Shinnecock. It's like, God, eventually you think he'd make a 6-7 foot putt. I mean, I know they're not easy, but 0% of them seem to go in for him. And then what happens is, you know, he'll make a chip in or something to get you excited, but then he'll miss a 3-footer. Then he'll miss a 4-footer. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. It just seems like, for four majors in a row, he should be the guy. And something is just really kind of – there's like a ceiling he can't burst his head through.
Well, Rory and him are in the exact same boat in that regard. I know Rory, his approach shots haven't been great either, but they're both near the bottom of the field, three rounds putting in terms of strokes gained putting. Like, I have not seen – and even this morning, Rory has started. He's given himself a chance on pretty much every hole. He's only made one birdie through five holes. He can't buy a putt. He's pulling putts almost like he's pulling some of his iron shots. He's pulling them from right to left. Then he tries to overcompensate. He's starting to wipe some putts as well. Like, I've never seen Rory's putter more ice cold than it has been this week. Somebody made an interesting point during the week. I'm not sure which of them it was on the Sky broadcasting team, but that Rory, he performs best on quick greens. Now, I know on the Stimp, these greens at Birkdale are operating around 11, but obviously that's way slower than he would be used to maybe around Augusta National, for example, where he's obviously putted really well over the last couple of years in particular. But he's just picked up another birdie, so he's 2-0 through six, which isn't too bad going off. It's certainly better than he's been able to put together for the opening three rounds. But it would have been so easy. There would have been so little more required for Rory and for Shane to be in this tournament. Really, they're only two or three shots worse than being right in the mix. And for Rory in particular, it's because he just cannot buy a putt.
I don't know why Fionn the RNA haven't speeded up the greens. There was no wind. You know, I understand it. Most years, they're afraid of the wind and, you know, play being cancelled and stuff. But they knew there was no breeze of note this week. And, you know, 11 is kind of slow, really. I was trying to say that to David Howard before the tournament. You know, the greens, you put the greens in practice in an open, you're like, oh my God, they're going to shave them on Thursday, and they never do. So I don't know why they didn't let them get a little less water, a little quicker. Because it is, although the American record around here is phenomenal, it is a huge change for the PGA Tour players coming over here. And because your rhythm is out when the greens are that much slower.
Sorry, Shane, I don't know, you might not have followed this story, but the Irish amateur David Howard, who is known to us here, young player out of Fota Island in Cork, who qualified at Dundonald. He missed the cut by 2 strokes. He finished on plus 3, but he finished well up on the field on the likes of, you know, Jordan Spieth, Patrick Harrington. I suppose notable not just for the fact that he's Irish, but also that he has cystic fibrosis. And but Gary, you and I were quickly talking before we went live, like, despite the fact that he missed the cut, and it's obviously disappointing for him that he did, he had an outstanding week, really, given that this is his first time anywhere near this level of elite golf.
Yes, and it's first
real.
Yeah, go ahead.
Real fast, Gary. I just want to say, all you Irish people, be proud of me, because not only did I write a story about David Howard, but I was the only American. I was the only American in the huddle of Irish reporters talking to him after his first round. So I just want to say,
I don't know why I expected. Of course, we should expect nothing less from you. Yeah, absolutely. He's just so you know, he's a class act. He's an absolutely brilliant golfer and an incredibly nice guy. Gary, but I cut across you. He had a great week despite the fact that he didn't make the cut.
He had a great week, and I was texting him on Friday night. Like, he was very disappointed not to get through, but he was the outsiders. Like, of all the amateurs that were kind of there, they won big stuff, and, you know, they've kind of huge TVs and all that kind of thing. And I think, if I'm right, I think he was tied leading amateur. Obviously, you got to make the cut to get the silver medal. Yeah. But it was a great performance. And, you know, I was up in Beltray on Friday night watching it, and because he won the East of Ireland last year. So they have great affinity to him up there. And obviously, it was Stuart Graham playing, but they were equally shouting for David. But, it was a great performance. Just a shame he couldn't get the weekend. But his first start in a pro event, never mind a major championship. I thought he acquitted himself very, very well.
Lads, time's against us. I know, Shane, you've got to go. So, look, I'm just looking at the scores as they're coming out now. You've got Cam Young, who is 3-under after 4, so he's on 6. You've got Ricky Fowler, who's about to post a 5, maybe a 6-under round, to be on minus 4. So there is a low score out there. I'm looking, where's the gap? Like, what realistically... How far back from Sam Burns' lead does anybody realistically have a chance?
Who are you asking there, Phil?
All of you.
Oh, look, I'll jump in. I think one of that clutch of big names is going to produce a really low round there. So I'm going to... I was going to cut it off at 6 under par, but because Scotty is now 5 under, having birdied the first, I'm going to extend it to him. So I think to anybody currently in a tight up for 10 right now is in the mix. I think one of Bryson, Ludvig Åberg, or Scotty Scheffler, or Fleetwood, one of those four are going to shoot 62 or lower today.
Jeez,
and put some savage pressure.
Wow, on Dave.
The likes of a Sam Burns and a well, it's 62. We've seen 362s already, so that would get the 6 unders to 14 under. I said earlier my prediction for the winning score is 14 under par. I think if one of those get to 14 under, they might make a playoff.
And, I don't think
we'll make I will
I think.
Okay, I'll go. I'll go next. Right. I'll go.
Okay, go ahead, Sean.
Go ahead, Gary. Go. You go. You go, Gary. I'm quiet.
62 on a Friday and 62 on a Sunday are different sports. So I don't think you'll need 14. I think 12 will win this comfortably.
Okay.
Well, that'll tell me that Sam Burns isn't going to win the tournament.
No, he can shoot 200 under that day.
I think if Sam Burns only goes out and shoots 200 today, he hasn't played well and doesn't win.
God, you're a tough girl. I don't want to be on your Ireland team, Dave. You're a tough coach.
Shane.
Yeah, I can see a situation where Cam Young goes, you know, 62. 62 would give him 11 under. That probably won't be good enough, but it's also pretty easy to see Burns getting stuck in neutral and shooting a 70, right? That's not crazy. So he's at 10 under. The winning score doesn't have to be better than 11 under, right? I mean, if it's all up to him. Like, I think we kind of said, if Sam Burns goes out and has a good day, he's probably going to win. If he shoots 68, maybe that's enough. 67, I think, would definitively be enough, only because I don't see Fox or Kim shooting a 64 or 63. I could be wrong, but I think those guys, like Gary said, it's kind of a different ball game on a Sunday at a major. So I think there's an outside shot for a Cam Young or Scotty if he goes crazy today to do it, but I think smart money says that Burns will get it together. You know, there's a lot of birdies on this course. All he has to do is shoot 67. I think he does it. I think he'll win at, let's call it 13 under.
Okay. So you've gone for Sam Burns. Dave and Gary, starting with you, Dave, pick your man.
My man is Rory McIlroy. He's just made a bogey, so that's the end of his charge. God, if I pick a winner, I would love to see Tommy Fleetwood shoot really low and give us a run for our money in the back nine. I'm not saying he's going to win, but if it isn't Sam Burns, I'm going to say Tommy.
Okay. Are you going with your heart or your head?
Oh, very much my heart, I think.
Okay. What about you, Gary, who always goes with his head?
I think Sam Burns will win, but I think Siwoo Kim will give him the most pain. I picked him at the start of the week. He's quite calm under fire. My only worry for Siwoo Kim is if he gets off to a slow start, he'll push too hard. I think if he turns an under par, he's in major danger.
Yeah. I literally have no idea because I'm terrible at this, but I'm going to just say, just to be difficult, I'm going to go Ryan Fox because he's only sitting 2 back and, you know,
no,
why
Sean,
not?
Sean, you don't back up 62s trying to win your first major. Come on, seriously.
So you think he, if he shot, say, a 66 or 67, that he won't have a chance?
Sam Burns, 65 yesterday after a 62 was so impressive.
Okay.
It's just so hard. It's so hard to back up a round like that.
Right. Okay. Shane, I'm going to let you get back to your duties at Royal Birkdale. Enjoy the Sunday, lads. The leaders go out at 2:20. We will be back tomorrow with our recap podcast. And just give fair warning, we're probably not going to spend too much time discussing Bryson DeChambeau unless he actually wins. We're not going to be discussing the penalty because I felt like we talked a lot about it today. But we will talk about winners tomorrow. But in the meantime, lads, thank you all. Gary, enjoy practice in Scotland. I hope it all goes well, and we'll catch up with you tomorrow.
Shane, enjoy your lunch.
See you guys.
See you, lads.
Thank you. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Oh. Little J.D. Starter. Right here.